KMOX Sports.
Come on, let's get going now.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Wind swings and he drives that to left field. Back to the track and gone!
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
Now, Matt Pauley and the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Here we go on a Wednesday night. Man, oh man, oh man, do we have a packed show for you this evening, taking you till 8 o'clock. We got a bunch of guests tonight. We got some really good guests coming up on the program. Bernie Miklas is going to join us in about 10 minutes later on this hour. Former Rams and Hall of Fame wide receiver Isaac Bruce is going to be with us as we talk through the 25th anniversary of the greatest show on turf. Next hour, we're going to try to break down everything that's going on with the Blues with Luke Korak, and also what a win it was last night for SLU basketball. They pick up a huge win against VCU, and with that, Gibson Jimerson, who just goes off last night, he's going to be with us as well. So we've got a jam-packed program. As always, if you would like to chat with us about anything that we are chatting about, you can call, you can text, you can tweet, and you can leave us a voice message. If you call or text, the phone number, 314-436-7900. 314-436-7900. If you want to tweet at me, you find me on Twitter at Matt Pauley on air, MattPauley on air. Or you can leave us a voice message if you happen to be listening via the Odyssey app. All right, let's start with, I think, the biggest news of the day. And that's the good fortune that just fell into the hands of the St. Louis Blues organization. What happened today with the Blues doesn't generally happen. But man, oh man, did they luck out. Because this time yesterday, what were we talking about? We were talking about the fact that Brandon Saad, he was being placed on waivers, that he was likely to clear through waivers, and that the Blues would then be assigning him to their top affiliate, their AHL affiliate in Springfield, where he would be a very highly paid minor league hockey player. Well, not so fast. Everything happens the way it was supposed to happen until you get to the point of him headed to Springfield, and that's not going to happen. In fact, not only is it not going to happen, Brandon Saad's no longer a member of the Blues organization, and in many ways, from a cap standpoint, the Blues just got themselves a financial windfall. So Saad had no interest, evidently, in going and playing minor league hockey. He's been in the NHL for a long time. He's been a fairly high-level NHL player. Going and playing in minor league rinks, in minor league locker rooms, on minor league buses, like that wasn't something that was on his to-do list. So the Blues and Saad, he got placed after being placed on waivers yesterday. He got placed on unconditional waivers today for the purpose of contract termination. Contract termination can happen when each side is okay with it. And each side was okay with this. So with the contract termination, he loses more than $5 million. $5 million over the next couple of years coming his way just goes away. He'll make up some of that with whatever team he signs with moving forward. He'll get an opportunity with another NHL team for sure. But he's not going to get an opportunity where he's going to make better than $5 million over the next couple years. More importantly, the Blues are now going to save his entire $4.5 million cap hit for this year, but more so for next year. The Blues are, like most teams in the NHL, the Blues are capped out, and they just don't have a whole lot of space to do much of anything with, and it is what has partially led to where this team is at in just kind of being in the middle, just being in an area where they don't have a superstar. They try to make some shrewd decisions to create some depth on the roster, but they're just not really adding at the high level. Not that saving $4.5 million against the cap is going to really change that in a major way, but it changes it in a minor way. It changes it in a way that you've got some more money sitting there and available to you. And more than anything else, you're out from a bad contract. That's not supposed to happen in sports, by the way. In sports, if you sign a bad contract, you just have to live with it. That's part of the sport. That's part of the cost and the risk and the gamble of being a decision maker, whether you're a general manager or a president of baseball operations, whoever is the final decision maker on rosters and contracts and things like that, part of the gamble of that job is handing out multi-year deals. And some of these deals the Blues have handed out have not aged well. They're not alone in that. Most teams sign some bad contracts at some point. But for one of these bad contracts that they had from a guy who just was not performing this year, and that's the case with Saad. He just wasn't performing this year at all. Had only 16 points in 43 games. You get out from that contract. You know, he had originally signed a 5-year deal at $22.5 million. One more year was on his contract. And he's been a solid Blue. 274 games, 74 goals, 144 points. Like, this is not trying to take anything away from him on his entire tenure, but he's been bad this year. He's been bad. And he was bad enough that a guy making that kind of money was going to be sent to the minors, and he makes the decision that, nah, I'm good. I don't need that money. I'll move on to somewhere else. I'll make a little less money, but I'll stay in the NHL. And I do wonder, like, how many NHL guys make that decision? Because it's what you value, right? And that's whether you're a professional athlete or, whatever you do for a living, decisions that you make are motivated by what you value. And he obviously values being in the NHL more than he values making the most amount of money that he can possibly make the rest of the way. There's a lot of guys out there that say, I'm not giving a penny back. Send me to Springfield. Send me to the AHL. I will put that Thunderbird on my chest, and I'll do my thing, and I'll make my money. But some guys would just say, you know what? I'm good. I've made a lot of money in my career. I'll make some of this back. I've got the opportunity to have a good second half of the season or a good final, third of the season, and maybe try to get an opportunity for a better deal next year. I just need a change of scenery. Like, that's what he's doing. I respect that. I do. Not that I disrespect somebody who doesn't make that decision, because Lord knows if I've got that kind of money headed my way, I'm probably going to the minor leagues. that's probably where I would go with this thing. And I think, I don't know, it would be interesting if you could just find out, if you could run that hypothetical situation by players and see which ones would choose to give the money back and which ones would choose to play in the minor leagues. He doesn't want to be a minor league hockey player. He made that choice. Blues are fine with that. They get out from underneath the contract, and here we are. Lou Korak will join us coming up next hour in about an hour. At about 7:20 is when Lou is scheduled to join us. Up next, Bernie Miklas. After that, Isaac Bruce. Don't go anywhere. We've got a jam-packed Graybar Sports Open Line. The big dog, Bernie Miklas, with us next here on KMOX. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. We've got so much going on tonight. Isaac Bruce is going to join us in 10, 15 minutes or so. Next hour, Gibson Jimerson after the big SLU win. Lou Korak's going to talk Blues hockey, but right now we're very happy to welcome on one of our favorite people out there. You hear him all the time here on KMOX. Our conversation is being brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling. He is the host of the Bernie Show on Twitter. Find it at the Bernie Show. Not Twitter. Well, it is on Twitter, but on YouTube is what I mean to say. He's Bernie Miklas. Bernie, I'll get you on so I can stop stumbling over all my words. How are you?
No, you're doing good, man. Hey, you mentioned Isaac Bruce, and I thought of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I just wanted to throw something out there. I've been doing some intel work on this. I think Torrey Holt's got his best shot by far to get in this year. I'm hearing good things. So I hope that's the case, because he's waited long enough, but I think he's next in line. I think there's a really good chance that the voting body will get behind him. They've already voted, but it won't be announced until later. But I don't know the vote for sure, but I just hear good things.
Okay, that's good to know. And I think everybody's rooting for him to get in. The Blues received a gift today. They got out from underneath a really bad contract for this year and next year. I mean, nothing better could have happened to the Blues than what happened today with Brandon Saad saying, I'd rather give back $5 million than play in the minor leagues.
How about that? I mean, I'm sitting there, and I honestly thought, Well, wait a minute. Did this really happen, or was someone saying it might happen, or is there a chance it would happen? Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they were. I don't know how Doug Armstrong and the Blues celebrate behind closed doors at the offices down there, but I don't know if this would have been a reason to raise a glass of champagne, but maybe they did some kind of awkward dance in celebration. Yeah, it's a real gift. You wrapped it up perfectly with that one word, a gift.
Yeah,
that's two words.
I get it. Like, you're in the NHL for a really long time. The last thing you want to do is play in minor league arenas and get on minor league buses and be in minor league locker rooms. I understand all that. But $5 million is $5 million, and he'll get a job somewhere, but he's leaving a whole lot of money on the table.
Well, that's right. And listen, I don't want to pile on this guy, because I was happy that he was a Blue for quite a while, but he was really awful this year, and he wasn't getting any better. And he had that one hat trick, and you got some hope there, and then he pretty much receded again after that. So, I mean, the Blues made the right move in releasing him or waiving him, but I don't think they expected for him to hand the money back. You know, so that's pretty. He must have a lot of confidence that he's going to get a good deal somewhere else.
How much frustration is there in this organization right now that even with Jim Montgomery coming in and even with it looking better, I'm not running away from the fact that the team has played better under him. Some of the underlying issues that have been around since Craig Berube and Drew Bannister, the comments we hear after games about not getting off to a fast enough start, not having enough energy, like these things are still here and they seemingly cannot get fixed.
It's a recurring nightmare. And I was looking at, I made a list, and I'm glad you asked me this. I made a list the other day, like which players, and I'm not talking about fringe guys, which core players have been a member of the Blues for all three coaches. You know, we're talking about Craig Berube. We're talking about Drew Bannister. We're talking about, of course, our coach now. The list is, well, the two goaltenders, then it's in no particular order. It's Justin Falk, Colt Parayko, Pavel Buchnevich, Jordan Kyrou, Jake Neighbors, Brandon Saad, who's now gone, Shen, and Robert Thomas. Also, Toropchenko and a couple other guys. But that's your core. That's the core that's been in place for all three of these coaches. So I really think, I'm not saying they're the only people to blame, but I think you have to look at your core. You have to wonder what the issue is there, because these are the guys, given their seniority on the team and the fact that they've been through a lot, they're the guys that have to take ownership of this situation. They're the guys who need to emerge as leaders. Braden Shen, I've never thought was going to be a great leader in the traditional sense. He's trying his best. He really is. But there is a collective lack of leadership in the house there as far as the players. And the first place I'd look, as I just said, is to the guys that have been here under all three coaches, the last three coaches.
How does this team fix that, even with the gifts that they were given of an extra $4.5 million against the cap going into next season? It still doesn't feel like that they're going to be able to go out and do what they need to do to have a massive change on this roster.
It's going to be tough. The thing of it is, you know, Doug Armstrong's going to have to make some really hard decisions, because he's been doing a retool. He's not given no indication he's going to tear the whole thing down and start all over again. But that said, hypothetically, if you think you could get a bundle for, say, Jordan Kyrou, would you think about doing that? Would you think about way back when, you know, the Blues traded TJ Oshie off of a young nucleus that wasn't making any progress, and they wanted to shake it up, and they shook it up by trading TJ Oshie. So my point is, that's a pretty big name player. It's been done before by many teams, and it's been done by the Blues before. Maybe you take a guy like that who's an example, and you just say, no, you're not working hard enough. You're not developing. You're taking everything for granted. We're going to get you out of here. I'm using that as a hypothetical. I think it would actually take a dramatic move like that. And I think furthermore, if there's a way to make a trade that would involve multiple players, I mean, where you send two players to someone else for three players or whatever, just change the mix. And I think Jim Montgomery will have a lot to say about this, because he wants to play a certain style. He wants this team to get faster. and more that have more energy that comes with playing fast. And I think that he'll work very closely with Doug Armstrong, and they're going to try to find out the best way forward beyond this season.
If they want to play fast, shouldn't Jordan Kyrou be doing more? He's the fastest guy there.
And absolutely. He's an enigma, let's be honest. He just is. And there's, you know, I've been disappointed in Robert Thomas, too, because he's really good for stretches, and then all of a sudden he kind of fades out. He's on the ice for a lot of goals. You know, some people you don't expect much from. Like, I don't expect a lot from Justin Falk. I think Parayko's doing as well as he can. He's not a leader type. I'm fine with the goaltenders. Shen was given a long-term contract that's looking worse by the season. So in terms of moving players, I think you have to go with your most talented players just to see what you can get for them. You have to put them out there on the market and let it be known that they're available.
Maybe I'll miss a guy on this, but just off the top of my head, I think the only players who actually really carry value in trade discussions, like you could get something back for them, and even some of these guys, teams might be balking at how much they get paid. But for me, it's Binnington. I think you get a little something for Parayko. You get something for Kyrou and for Thomas. Outside of those four guys, Bernie, I don't know who else on that roster actually has a whole lot of value.
I think Buchnevich would, you know, and he signed a deal, and it wasn't an outrageous deal. He's got a long term contract now, so they don't have to worry about him. I mean, he's a really, really good player. I'm not sure what's been up with him this year, but I think he's a really, really good player who, for 90% of the time, has competed really hard. But they, you know, they also screwed him up. Bannister screwed him up by insisting that he was a center, and he's obviously not a center. So he had to kind of start all over again under Jim Montgomery. But I think Booch would – there'd be a market for him.
That's a really good point, too. It might take to next season to get him back going just because he didn't get the opportunity to become who he was going to be this year because of everything that Bannister did with him in the middle.
You know, and one other note, because I want to throw this one at you, see what you think of this. I think one of the problems the Cardinals have had in recent years, because we've seen all those outfielders come and go, they tend to overrate their own prospects, right?
Yeah.
And these prospects get a big buildup, and then they come here, and look, they may do some good things, but they aren't what the team hyped them up to be. I think the Blues are kind of in that spot too. Like, we're all looking at these young prospects that they have down below, and believe me, there's some exciting talent and all that. But you look at the Athletic, and I trust their prospect watcher. He's got the Blues as like the 14th best prospect pool in the National Hockey League. And my point being, are the Blues kind of doing the same thing that the Cardinals did? You know, where you're just blowing up way too much how great your prospects mm-hmm. are, and they won't live up to it. Much like Tyler O'Neill, Dylan Carlson, and some others that came through St. Louis.
Probably, although the one area I would push back on at least is maybe they don't have the high level prospects that they want, but number of prospects. You look at the fact that they'd, you know, so many guys in the World Juniors and things. That's a tangible number you can at least look at.
No, they have some people that have accomplishments and I think improve their stock, but I do wonder about high end. I mean, I think the Blues really to really turn the corner, they need more high end talent. And how long will it take some of their young prospects, even when they get to the National Hockey League, how long will it take them to develop into that kind of player? I don't know. I mean, it's sort of an open-ended question. There is talent, but how do we rate that talent, and what is going to be the ceiling of that talent?
Before I let you go, Bernie, what a win last night for the Billikens as they try to establish themselves at the top of the A-10.
I love the way I watched that game. I loved it. I love the way they played defense. I mean, this is, you know, St. Louis, you couldn't hit many three-pointers, and there were some things going wrong. But whenever they reached a tough spot in that game, their defense was outstanding. And I think that's something that they're going to have to repeat against, you know, against their A-10 opponents. But, you know, we view Josh Schertz as kind of an offensive guy, and he's, you know, clever sets and things that he does, and the way players play without the ball and all the motion and everything else. But he's been pounding it into them how they have to get physical and play defense. And you saw the result of that initiative last night. I was really inspired by that.
Great stuff from Bernie Miklas. Bernie, before we let you go, and coming up in just a moment, we'll remind folks that Isaac Bruce is going to join us. But Bernie, we always love being able to hear a little bit about Saliga Heating and Cooling.
Absolutely, man. The Miklas family have been calling Zuliga Heating and Cooling for, 15, 16 years. It is a family business since 1927, continuously owned by the Zuligas, and they've been serving generations of St. Louis families. Listen, I'll cut right to the chase here. They opened in 1927, and they're still going strong. They're getting bigger and better. They're growing. More clients, more families call them. You're not going to last all years, almost 100 years, unless you were great at what you do, unless you got 100% faith in your trustworthiness and honesty, and unless you were really, really good. I mean, the top of the line in terms of your professionalism. So they can do a lot for you. Check out the Priority Club. It's a maintenance program, and it is absolutely worth every nickel. We are in it, so I'm only speaking from our experience. They also have that top of the line American Standard heating and air conditioning equipment. So look into the go to SaligaHeatingCooling.com. Take a look at the maintenance plan, the Priority Club, it is called. Financing options are available for anything at Saliga, subject to credit approval. The best thing to do is go to SaligaHeatingCooling.com. Thank you.
Welcome back in. A Graybar Sports Open Line rolls on here on KMOX. Maybe you're listening on KMOX.com, streaming it on the Odyssey app, listening back to it on the podcast, wherever you're listening in. We certainly appreciate you. It's hard for me to believe it's been 25 years since the greatest show on turf, since the Rams won the Super Bowl against the Tennessee Titans, but indeed 25 years. We all remember that 73-yard touchdown pass to Isaac Bruce that Kurt Warner threw, and that ends up being the one of the two decisive plays, I guess you can say, in that game along with the tackle. Let's reminisce a little bit about the greatest show on turf, about the Super Bowl, and let's bring in former St. Louis Rams wide receiver and Pro Football Hall of Famer Isaac Bruce. Isaac, thanks so much for taking some time with us tonight.
Hey, I'm doing well, man. I appreciate you guys having us on, and appreciate you celebrating the 25th year anniversary, man. This is big for a lot of different reasons, a lot of fans, and the players as well. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Does it feel like it's been 25 years?
Some days it does, and other days it doesn't. I mean, it was a great run. The memories are still very fresh in our thinking, and we had a chance to celebrate earlier this season with the St. Louis Cardinals, who were so gracious to bring me and my teammates into town so that we can have a true celebration in St. Louis. And, when we get together, it's all fun and games, and we get to reminisce about practices, plays, charter flights, and things of that nature. So it was a beautiful time.
Yeah, how much do you enjoy when everybody's able to get together? Because I remember that night when the Cardinals had you in, and it just seems like the camaraderie of all you guys is still there.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, we have lasting memories. There's only a handful of guys walking this planet that can, can finish each other's sentences, each other's thoughts when it pertains to the greatest show on turf. And it's sweet. It's special. And we cherish those moments.
How often do you think about that? Obviously, you had a huge game, the touchdown, everything. Like, do you think about that game very often, or is it something that you generally only kind of think about it maybe when you're doing things like this or when you're around other people that are asking you about it?
Well, I say it's a combination of both. There are thoughts that sometimes travel through my thinking when I see my teammates, when I see Torrey, I see Marshall, I see Big O, Kurt. We reminisce about it. And this time of year, you just can't help but see it because it was one of the greatest games ever played, Super Bowl 34. And always around Super Bowl season, you start to see highlights and you get opportunities to do interviews and just reminisce about your Super Bowl experiences. So they come up quite often.
Well, you had that big 73-yard touchdown reception, ends up being the game winner. When you think back on that, what's going through your mind as that play, as those 73 yards are playing out?
Well, I'd say a few things. Number one, to get in the end zone, and try to shut the game down. But also, some of my childhood memories. I mean, whenever I thought about playing football and watching professional football, I was always a wide receiver catching a game-winning pass at a Super Bowl. You know, that moment came true for me. I mean, it was manifested before, you know, in front of 50 million people. I got an opportunity to enjoy it. And just really wishing at that moment that the game was over, that it was done. Unfortunately, it wasn't, and had to go on the sideline and sweat it out like everyone else.
Where were you at on the sideline when the tackle was made?
Yeah, I was away from the crowd, you know, in my normal spot. You know, one reason I didn't get near the crowd because, you know, you got defensive players who are on the field. They're actually doing their jobs. And the guys who play defense, they're lined up behind the coaching staff, the defense coordinators, the defensive assistants, just in case if their numbers get called, that they have to go into the game. It can get real congested, you know, in that area. And these guys are tall, you know, 6'6", 6'7", 6'5", and it's hard to see over these guys. So, you know, I always would remove myself from that crowd and go to the end of the opposite end of the field and kind of watch the game through the Jumbotron to the actual play on the field.
We're talking with former St. Louis Rams receiver, Hall of Famer Isaac Bruce. When you think about the group of guys that Kurt had to throw to, yourself, Torrey Holt, Oz Kakim, Ricky Prohl, Marshall Faulk,
we have
seen offensive explosion in the NFL, but has there ever been a group of five people who could catch the football the way you guys had that year with that team?
You know what? I'd really have to go into my Rolodex and just think about what was happening with Doug Williams in Washington. You know, the Denver Broncos had a squad. And not only that, Dan Fouts and Kellen Winslow and those guys, they had a group of guys that really could do a lot of things on the football field. I think the unique thing about us is that, you know, we had probably at the receiver position, every guy could be a starter in the league. And we could take the top off of defense, from myself to Oz to Tony Horn. We could just do it all. We could create great separation, which is everything that you needed to be a starter in the National Football League. And I think, you know, mentioning that, we're all very selfless. We didn't care who made the play or, you know, who made the big block. And we all held each other accountable. We celebrated each other's success. And we had the fortune of taking that group and those talents to a Super Bowl and winning it.
Speaking of celebrating success, one success that we're still really hoping for is that Torrey Holt, like you, gets selected for induction in the Hall of Fame. I think everybody agrees that he deserves it. How much are you rooting for the committee to go ahead and make that decision and get him into Canton?
I'm standing right there with Torrey. I mean, I was fortunate to see the day he walked through those doors in St. Louis to watching his last play in the National Football League, and what a tremendous career. You know, a lot of people must realize that, you know, the group of guys that we played with, there was only one football. And to really carve out a place for yourself amongst that group, it took a lot of persistence. It took discipline. It took everything that Torrey Holt played with. So I think this is the year that the committee gets it right.
So, you know, obviously the Rams left St. Louis, but so many former Rams from St. Louis continue to be engaged in the city. Folks like you, we see you back in town. What does the city mean to you? And kind of a weird situation where, you know, like you said, it was the Cardinals had honored the 25th anniversary because the team wasn't around. But it feels like you and so many other former Rams continue to be very committed to this city.
Well, I can speak for myself. I mean, you know, I arrived in St. Louis at the tender age of 22, and a lot of greats happened to me there in the city of St. Louis. So I consider St. Louis as a second home, you know, right after Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And I enjoy being there. I enjoy the fans. The fans were very knowledgeable. The fans made it tough for opposing teams to come in and execute offensively, defensively, and they knew football. And I felt like that we had a huge connection with the fan base. I mean, so much so that they, you know, they rode that wave with us all the way to the Super Bowl, the Super Bowls that we played in. And that's something that can never be taken away from St. Louis, from the players that played there, just those memories that we have there. I think there'll always be a place in St. Louis for that group of guys.
We're talking with Isaac Bruce. Before we get down here, just want to mention the Isaac Bruce Foundation, because you continue to give back. Would encourage everybody listening to check out the website, isaacbruce.org. You do so many things, from football clinics to scholarships to literacy efforts, your Flight 300 program. I mean, there's so much that you do. Why has it become such a passion for you that in your post-playing career, you continue to give back in a really major way?
Well, thanks for mentioning the foundation. You know, Tiffany Bird, she does a great job hitting it. And, you know, it's just part of what we do as people. I won't just say professional athletes, because when it's time for the Isaac Bruce Foundation to have a gala, to have a football camp, to, you know, what we do as far as Flight 300 is concerned, there are a lot of people who don't get recognition who help us tremendously with those events. And I feel like as a citizen, we have a responsibility to respond to the needs of other citizens. So mm-hmm. I think the Isaac Bruce Foundation, we do a good job at that. Flight 300 is a program where we're flying students to school who can't afford an airline ticket or a bus ticket. So we stepped in there and we kind of bridged the gap to create, you know, some size of relief for people who normally just wouldn't have anything to be able to get to school.
Again, the website, isaacbruce.org. Make sure to check it out. So many wonderful things that Isaac is doing through his foundation. Isaac, thank you so much for taking some time. As somebody who was in attendance at that Super Bowl as a fan, it doesn't feel like it was 25 years ago. And I'm so grateful that I was able to experience that. I know St. Louis Rams fans were able to experience. So thank you for taking some time to reminisce about it just a bit.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
The great Isaac Bruce joining us on the program, and we appreciate him taking his time. 25 years since that Super Bowl, and it's fun to think about for sure. Even with everything that has happened to football in St. Louis since then, it is fun to think about since then, and cool to be able to talk with Isaac Bruce about that for just a little while. All right, we will take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up hour number one of the program. Still need to get into what happened last night at Shea Fitz Arena, both from a on-court perspective and also from a in-the-stands perspective. What a wild night. We'll talk about that a little bit coming up. It's a Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it as we roll on, starting to wrap up this first hour of the program. Hour number two, jam-packed just as well. We'll talk with Lou Korak at 7:20. Get his thoughts on everything going on with the Blues, including the gift that they were given today of being able to get out from underneath the Brandon Saad contract. We are also going to hear from Gibson Jimerson at about 7:35 or so. We'll get his thoughts on what went down last night for the Billikens on the court and off the court. And we'll continue this conversation into the 7 o'clock hour after the 7 o'clock news. So if you have any thoughts on what went down last night, you can certainly send those in via Twitter at Matt Pauley on air. Text them in at 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. What an interesting night last night. But it got people talking. It got people, I mentioned this, that you know, obviously, St. Louis is a Cardinals town, and everything the Cardinals do, people talk about, and the Blues to a lesser extent. But I always think it when things happen with the Billikens, good or bad, it becomes so. Just as an example, I was picking up my daughter from kindergarten today, and I see her kindergarten, her elementary school principal, who's a great guy, love him. And anytime I see him, we generally end up talking sports for just a few minutes before he heads over to take care of carpool stuff, which elementary school principals have to do. And today, as we have our quick little, you know, minute-long conversation, he brings up the Billikens game from last night. Like, that was the top thing on the mind, and that was everywhere. Everybody was talking about it, both because the Billikens got a win, a really good win against VCU last night, 78-69, and they go to 6-2 in A-10 play, and they beat one of the teams that is a legitimate contender to win the A-10, like all those things. So that's really good. But then what's not really good but had people talking was what happens in the stands where there is a fight, like a full-fledged fight that takes place behind the VCU bench, so much so that they had to stop the game. They had to stop everything for about 5 minutes, and high-level athletics officials are in there trying to separate people, and they're secure. Like, that just doesn't happen. And SLU did issue a statement today saying that they are going to investigate it. There's been some rumblings out there that maybe there was some sort of conflict between parents of VCU players and some SLU fans, whether that might have been SLU fans directing something at VCU players and parents hearing it, or just SLU fans just saying things that fans say, but they were in the vicinity of parents of VCU players, so they hear it and they take offense to it. Like, it wasn't good. It was not good at all. And that's the bummer. This is where I'm torn as a sports radio host, because from a talking standpoint, I got stuff to talk about, because there's a fight at the basketball game last night in the stands that was kind of crazy. So if my job, and it is, if my job is to sit here and you know, talk about the things that you're talking about and give opinions on it and get interaction and all that sort of stuff, then last night is great for that. However, I love St. Louis. I want to see Bill Kidd's basketball be incredibly successful. Our city has been dragged through the mud at times, especially from a sports perspective recently. Not from a sports perspective. A lot of times, with it's self-inflicted wounds with leadership and other things in the community. Like, there's just a lot going on, and the last thing I want is on national TV there to be this fight that everybody looks at. I mean, people, the college basketball world was looking at it on Twitter last night as it's happening, and the last thing I want is people to say, "Oh, see, it's St. Louis. That's the stuff that happens in St. Louis." So that's the bummer of it all. We'll continue this conversation after the 7 o'clock news. Maria Keenan has that coming up in just a few minutes right here on KMOX.